He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good day for our listeners for this week's version of Car Keys with Jada Markin and Robin Leach. I'd like to start this week off with it's in late summer, and I am looking at all this stuff going on in the automobile industry, and one of the good things that seems to be happening, at least with some imports, is a reduction in their sticker pricing. I bring up only one maker at this point because that's what the story is about. And not a lot of listeners probably know what a Grenadier is, but there are some local area people here who already have them, and they are driving around our northwest corner. And I don't know that Jay's actually driven one. I have not.
But, I have not.
It is a very rugged-looking vehicle to match the Jeep Wranglers and the Ford Broncos and the Mercedes Galunda wagons or whatever you call them. And they have been in the U.S. for a couple of years, not selling very well, probably partly because of production problems that are, I think, taken care of, but more probably because their prices are up in the upper end of the spectrum of these off-road vehicles. Therefore, you have to have a good purse string to purchase one or lease one. In any event, they've reduced their prices from what they were, and I may or may not bring that up, by 10% across the line. The 10% goes from $80,000 and $90,000 vehicles and maybe higher downward by a roughly 10% at each level. I suspect this we're going to see some of this in other makers, maybe the foreign imports from Europe. Don't know what's going to happen with the Asian imports that aren't built in the U.S., but the tariffs are obviously taking an effect psychologically and maybe realistically in some of the makers' minds, and the import tariffs.
Let me barge in on this one. I think Grenadier is a great new vehicle. We've talked about it. I think Grenadier's problem is does not reflect the industry as a whole or you know, trends in the market. I think the problem with Grenadier is Grenadier's marketing, and it's a very tough proposition to come out with a new vehicle and hope to sell it across the board, and especially in countries like ours. So I'm unable to even list a dealer. I know there are dealers around, But this is because I pay attention to this vehicle. I know that if I wanted one, I know how to do a search to find them. But you don't see any advertising for Grenadier. You do not see any, you know, not a lot of marketing efforts, and no standing out dealer network.
That is true. Although,
I think that's where the problem lies. And it's very hard for any other manufacturer and new manufacturers that are out there, and there are some, you know, whether it's Tesla, Lucid, you know, all these new electric car companies, Rivian, have an online buying model, which kind of goes well with the whole concept of going electric, I guess, maybe. So I think Grenadier's problem, I know they've had production issues, but I think the main problem is marketing.
They've been fixed. There is the largest Grenadier, well, the only one I know of is in Danbury, and it's part of a Mercedes complex down there.
Yes.
In Danbury Mall. So, and besides the fact that there are very few other dealerships or locations, you know, I don't know whether you would buy one and start out on an off-road marketing adventure, road adventure somewhere remotely in our country, knowing whether or not you'd be fully reliable without needing a call to AAA or any other means of getting it to a dealer. I remember when I had one of my first A8 Audis, I was stranded down at the end of a national park one evening because the car wouldn't start, and there wasn't an Audi dealer within 400 miles of me. And That's just an example of the kind of things some of these manufacturers are having difficulty with, which is part of what Jay has been talking about. Dealer network locations, numbers, and the invisibility factor is certainly part of it. Although, as we all know, all you got to do is put the name in Google search or another search, and up should pop something. Whether or not it's near you is remains to be seen.
Yeah, and the name of the company is INEOS, I-N-E-O-S.
I-N-E-O-S, that's correct. Yeah. Whether or not Grenadier would do it or INEOS is required is another thing that you find out when you try to go locate these smaller new manufacturers that show up and want to make a headway into sales in the United States.
That's why I think the strategy of cutting prices on that vehicle doesn't make much sense, because I don't think those vehicle purchases of those types are not really price sensitive. You know, whether you're looking at $80,000 or $90,000, I think people who are looking at those vehicles are not cross
shopping.
Exactly. Yeah. So
anyway. I agree with that. I do know a person personally who bought one. And in the early days of their marketing and their appearance in our country, they were coming in fully loaded with lots, which is what new manufacturers do. They have introductory models and things like that, and they're usually on the pricier end of the spectrum. And this person told me that he basically got a multi-$1,000 discount off of the sticker price of the vehicle he ended up with, because the dealer at that point, and they were, this was really early on, wanted to get them out on the road, and basically discounted all the options and gave them a big discount. I don't know whether that still happens in this marketing world or not, but we can move on. There's a auto show, I guess, going on in Munich, Jay, or if it's not going on, it's coming up. And Audi, BMW, Kia, Ford, Cupra, and BYD, a Chinese company, are all going to be represented. I do not know what when you next go to Europe, I don't know that our listeners really care about what's going on in Europe, but I do, and you do. You might find out what Europe's situation is with the Chinese companies, if you know anything about that, in terms of what are these. You know, you have talked about how inexpensive they are in China, all the Chinese brands, strikingly so, if you really research it.
Yeah, I think.
But they're not going to be that inexpensive in Europe, and I don't know when they're going to get into the United States and what they would be charged to.
Well, interestingly, I think Chinese cars are like the rest of Chinese products. You know, the idea that they have to be cheap to sell is just a concept of the past. And to that effect, there was a statement from the CEO of Rivian just recently. I read about that too, saying that, you know, the Chinese cars are just technologically more advanced and better quality than ours.
Well, that's what you've been
this
saying.
Is coming
that's
from the CEO tough. Of Rivian. And he went on to discuss the fact that, you know, they're not Chinese manufacturers are not competing on price anymore, where they're allowed to compete, like in Europe and the rest of the world, but they're competing on the quality and the merits of the product.
Right.
And that's what, you know, the day, if there is a day when we see those vehicles land on our market, they are going to make inroads. Just like the Japanese manufacturers made inroads in the 1970s, yes. You know, mm-hmm. Toyota, Datsun at the time came into this market with low-priced vehicles, then built a reputation on quality. And now, you know, there's nothing cheaper or lesser about a Japanese car relative to anything else. And that's just the way the cookie bounces. Yes, BYD and other Chinese manufacturers will make inroads. Speaking of BYD, interestingly, their sales are down for 2025, and their sales are down, I think, almost 20%, including in China. And that, to me, is a greater problem. And actually, that was a discussion at the Munich Auto Show as well. European manufacturers such as Volkswagen, Mercedes, BMW are taking a hit because the Chinese market has slowed down quite a bit for whatever reasons that is. But they're
Well, it may be exportability at all levels. It may be saturation. It may still be a little bit of the structural network of charging stations availability in these countries. I'm sure
Well,
China's got thousands of charging ports around their cities, and but I don't know much about European ones. We are still in a budding sort of early stages of trying to get ours up in the country.
yeah,
And
I just think it has, little to do or not everything to do with the electric market per se. It's just car sales in general are down in China. So,
yeah. Well,
whether
that's
it's
okay.
ICEs
Okay.
or electric cars, it's just sales are down,
Okay.
and all manufacturers who sell there are taking a hit. And
Fine.
meanwhile, sales seem to have been pretty good in the first half of this year, although industry experts figure that that's because there was a rush, in the spring. People went out and started buying cars because we were afraid of incoming tariffs. And
And the ending of and the ending of as we talked in last the last show, I think, the ending of the tax incentives that are coming up quickly in about less than a month from this show's broadcast.
Yep, and manufacturers such as GM, Volkswagen, and others have already started to plan slowing down production of EVs or even shutting down
Yep.
certain lines of production
Yeah,
for
Ford with
you know.
their pickup trucks is one slowing down. I don't know what the Ford Mach-E is doing. It has been a pretty good seller. I saw some chart where they compared it, the Ford Mach-E Mustang version, or the Mustang version, the Ford Mach-E versus the real Mustang. And it was neck and neck, I think, in 1 month or maybe 1 quarter as to the numbers of regular Mustangs. Fossil fuel, that is, the old style, and the Mach-E. So we'll see where that goes too.
You mean the biggest marketing flop in recent Ford history? The Mach-E?
Well, what the sales were pretty good.
Yeah, they could be better. They should be better. But anyway.
Yes, but this should be better for lots of the electric cars across the line, I think, don't you
So,
think?
interestingly, yesterday I was driving in and around New York, and I just saw the two Cadillac EVs, both the Lyriq
Yep.
and the Vistiq. And the Lyriq is like a mid-size SUV. It's got a bit of a coupe look to it, and the Vistiq is more like a full-size,
SUV.
slightly smaller than that Escalade, but it looks like a more traditional more traditional SUV. And they are both very, very good-looking vehicles. And when you look at the performance numbers, whether it's range, power, and their and their specs and in general, their pricing, yes, they're expensive vehicles, but they're very competitive vehicles and a really compelling proposition if you're
I
looking
agree
for.
if you can afford it. I agree the looks of them are striking. I think the looks of the regular Cadillacs have become more striking in the last few years. And I'm seeing more and more of these giant Escalades. And they're all big and black. So they're very noticeable, and they have a very high stance on the road as well. And I think they are a very much of a favorite of the airport group that you see in the cell phone parking lots. There are
Yeah,
lots to go.
all of New York City is full of Cadillac Escalades with one passenger in them.
Yes, it is. I don't know whether that makes the fares appropriate for the vehicle you're riding in, or whether it doesn't, Jay.
Well, it's like if you go in the Uber world, it's a license to steal, I guess. It's just it,
Okay, no, really.
yeah.
Okay.
Well, if people are willing to pay for it,
A little bit of Audi information for those Audi fans who may be listening. The A4 is being discontinued, I believe. The A5, a model of it, is changing their makeup, and they're using the A6 to blend both features of the A5 line and the A4 line going forward, I think, in 2026. I'm not sure it's smart, but sedan sales, Jay, as you know, and you've been saying, are down across the line of all the manufacturers as people gravitate or have been gravitating toward these SUV styles and alternative styles to just straight sedans. That's it for Audi.
Well, I had an experience with an Audi Q5 recently, which is it's actually a first generation. I think it's a first gen. It's like a 2012-ish car that has
Right
not too
in the
many
first
miles, but
generation, I
like
think, yeah.
well over 70,000 miles. And I had the opportunity to drive this car over the weekend, and it felt like a brand new car. It was extremely well maintained. It is extremely well maintained, but also I just liked everything about it. And I know I'm opening a can of worms here because you're going to just jump into
I am
this.
about to, so keep going.
Yes, you're about to, because I was sitting in that car and I just like 2010s, 2015 cars. They still have buttons. You can read the dials, and yet they're modern vehicles without having the impression of looking at your computer screen and or your TV. And I know I'm opening a can of worms because you're going to be about to barge in with buttons and not buttons.
I am. And I will right now. You just gave me the opening. I would like, and I know a lot of us older people would like to see the return of buttons and dials, as opposed to the increasing use of not two screens on a dashboard, but one large, almost across the dashboard screen in many of these, in some of these new cars, with so many things you've got to look at to try to figure out where you want to go. That if you are not a genius and can memorize what's on those screens and learn to touch it without looking at it, you've got to spend a lot of time looking at screens on the newer models. And this has happened to your Q5, Jay. My family recently acquired a 2019 version of what you just talked about, a Q5, and it has a center screen. But it's got a regular dashboard, I mean a regular viewing dashboard viewing of the speed limit, along with a digital insert and other features that are now missing from the latest version of the Q5.
No,
The
I
center
will.
screen, which was relatively, it was also difficult to do. You had to take your eyes off the road to let's say change radio stations, that kind of thing. But the new screen is just a big disappointment, not positive in my view book at all. And
But
it's completely
I
another
will,
car you will.
I know what you mentioned in our notes, and you were talking about voice activated commands, and I think disagree with you there. I think that if you can have, and we're getting there, voice commands that are effective, that is not a bad thing. And we've
They're
been in
working
car,
on it. They are
yeah.
working on it.
But even apps like CarPlay that you plug into your car, responding to messages, searching in maps and things like that. These are functions that, if you can do with verbal commands, do allow you to keep your eyes on the road.
Okay, let me just bring up an interesting sideline to this, Jay, and I'd like you to comment on it because you travel a lot. You may not rent cars a lot, but being a member of a family that has children at college, we now fly out to Colorado to see this child, and we rent cars. And what you don't know out there is, what are the station call letters and what are the stations you want to try to tune in when you're tuning a radio? So I'm not sure how the verbal command option is going to help us figure that out if we want to pick music up in Denver or Boulder or any other place in the country where we are, you know, a foreign visitor, so to speak, and don't know our call letters like we do in this Northwest Connecticut corner, so that we can't just use vocal commands to say, please tune to Robin Hood Radio, which is what we're broadcasting from, because we don't know what we're doing. You know, we don't know what to call for out in any other place outside our listening area where our call, where we've learned what our call names are for stations and the like. And that doesn't help me think that vocal commands are the way to go in radio tuning, for example. Bring back the knobs.
Okay, Robin, we'll bring back knobs. I mean, I do agree with you in for the most part. I mean, I think knobs are the way to go. And if you look in aviation, they still use a lot of knobs and almost only knobs. So, yeah, something to be said about knobs.
Okay, we can move on. Go ahead.
I want to talk a little bit about, you know, how we buy cars and
We've done this, but go ahead, do it again.
Well, we've done everything. I mean, we've covered a bunch of subjects.
So return.
I'm always looking at cars, and a lot of us look at cars and either are tire kickers, like you can blame me for being, but we can't just go out and buy a car every time we like one. But I like looking at cars. And if I'm looking at, you know, just fun cars, I know where to go look for them. But if you're looking to buy a car, whether it's a new car or used car, there are a bunch of sites out there. And I have to plead guilty. I thought that they were, most of them were all the same, based on the same database, but they seem to not be. So sites like Auto Trader and Car Gurus, for instance, seem very similar in their offerings and what you can find. But basically, they each work off their own database and gather their own listings, and a little bit like in real estate. I just, you know, I think there are a lot of good sites out there, whether it's Auto Trader, Kelly Blue Book, Edmunds, Car Gurus, cars.com. And there's also one called Auto Tempest, which prides itself on aggregating all the data from all the other companies, all the other websites. Yes.
Can you Google a list of them? Because how, I'd never heard of Auto Tempest until just now. So how would I know to even find that option if I was going to go online to do this?
Call Google or DuckDuckGo.com. Just put in, auto listing sites. And Auto Tempest seems pretty, you know, they do what they say they do. I have never really used them. I've used a few others. You know, there's just a lot of it. I mean, everything you need to know is out there. You just have to take the time to go and look for it and then look for the car and just put in your own criteria. And some sites work better than others, I think. And,
well, you know, the industry has been seeking the ability to go to online buying and online looking. And you introduced this topic by saying you like to look at cars and kick tires, and so do I. And I do not know what the new generation of buyers is actually doing to make the industry happy that they're seeking online sales without ever going to a lot and kicking the tires and opening the doors and looking at the interiors. I do not know whether that's going on used car sites too, but can you see what the tire tread depth is on an online purchase of a used car? I don't know what you can't see. You'd want to see by and prefer to go and go to the lots as opposed to start just looking at cars online. Maybe you can do that to see what the pricing is and all that before you go to a dealer and actually get on the site.
A lot of those listing sites have, you know, usually when you look at a car, most offerings will have, I don't know, 20 to 30 pictures of a car, and usually, you know, one of each wheel. You can see the scratches on the rims. A lot of times you can see more stuff than you would see that if you're actually just going and walking around the car. To that point, you know, and we're getting to my favorite site, which is, you know, for any a car addict, you have to go to Bring a Trailer, and I have to read Bring a Trailer every morning. You read your news and you read and you look at Bring a Trailer and you see what's selling that day. But the listings on sites like Bring a Trailer have a couple hundred pictures for a car. So I mean, everything is detailed, and they make it a point of pointing out the faults of a car. So
couple hundred pictures, Jay, to interrupt you. Is that the way you really want to look at a car, and you want to look at 200 pictures of a car? Like, how much time would that take you to do?
An hour every morning? No,
an hour per car, or an hour?
No, an hour every morning. I'm just kidding. But no, what it does is they will show. I mean, just go to it. I'm surprised you don't spend any money. You're a car guy. Go to Bring a Trailer. They will show the underbody of the car. They will show the tires. They will show, you know, if there's a chip in the hood or in a scratch in the bumper. I mean, all that is explicitly detailed. So it's better in most ways than seeing the car in person. The only thing you're not doing is driving the car, but you have a drive, you know, you usually have a driving video. The only thing you can't do is get the smell of it. Does it smell like an old car? Does it smell, has somebody smoked in the car? And that, by the way, is like my biggest beef. I bought one car sight unseen, and when I got to it and I got in it, I did sense a trace of cigar smell, and it drove me nuts. And yes, I was able to get it out of the car, but it just haunted me for months.
That's very interesting, Jay. You know, and our listeners, I hope, are taking note of these. Here's a comment I have. One thing you can't do without going and physically driving the car is drive the car when you're looking online. The problem I had with two Carvana purchases I was personally aware of was that the brakes on both the vehicles that I was aware of were defective in terms of Carvana's warranty took care of it. But if you had not driven the car, you would not have felt the pulsating brake pedal feel that you get when you've got warped discs or worn pads or whatever else would make that feeling come through. And this is for used car discussions and research. And you won't find that on Bring a Trailer, and you won't find that on any of the used car sites as being something that is photographicable, for one thing, or even probably disclosable for another thing. And if you go buy one of these cars and you drive it off the lot, and it may or may not surface, and you don't know about brake feel and all that kind of thing, you could get yourself into an expensive repair that you needed later on, and it might be beyond the 3 month, 3,000 mile used car warranties that are usually state mandated in many states with used car dealers. But it might be, you know, something you just don't know enough about until you take it into a repair shop and they tell you you need new brakes.
Well, let's be honest. Any used car you buy, there is always an element of risk, right? I mean,
correct.
Most cars you test, even when you go test drive a car, you're usually doing three rights around the block and then
that's
you're coming
right.
back.
You're back to the dealer. It's really crazy.
At 27 miles an hour.
Time to park this car in the garage. Thank you.
Okay, well.
All right, moving on.
Moving on.
Have a
we'll
wonderful
talk to you
week.
Next week.
Let's go drive cars.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, Robinhoodradio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.